And I am going to invite Dr. Mitri Raheb to take us into the area of liberation theology in Palestine. Dr. Mitri, please.
Welcome. Yeah. Thank you, Professor Eugene, for making this a reality, this meeting. And I admire all of you, actually. I've been sitting here for 4 hours. But I tell you, the end is near.
Liberation theology.
So, I mean, you know, this last topic seems to be actually out of place. I mean, why talk about theology when we are talking about the history and archaeology of Palestine? But remember, Western historiography and archaeology saw the Bible as a book of history. And then archaeology wanted to prove this history. And therefore, actually, history as well as archaeology were subordinated to the biblical accord. In this context, Palestine became the land of the Bible, a mythical land, an imagined land, and a land of one singular people and one singular religion, which means actually Palestine has been always, always a pluralistic society, very diverse. But through this lens, through this narrow theological, evangelical lens, Palestine became the land of one religion, namely Jewish religion. And the land was seen as empty, a land without a people. But the land was not empty. But the land was made empty by silencing the indigenous people of Palestine. Even when they saw us, they thought we don't belong there, because this is the land of another people. And so Palestine was perceived as a mono-religious country and no place for ethnic plurality or religious diversity. And then after the establishment of the State of Israel, the Israelites of the Bible were confused with the Israeli of today, and the Judahites, the people in southern Palestine, were confused with the Jewish people of today. And an ethno-national and religious state was then projected into the Bible. This is the theory of Keith Whitlam. Now, this theology was in no way an innocent theology, because this was an integral part of an Anglo-Saxon. Sorry for the British, you have to to deal with us today, you know. So this was part of an Anglo-Saxon colonial project aiming at sending European Jews to Palestine as subcontractors to the British Empire. And in this context, the Bible actually was weaponized against us to make this a reality. Now, the problem that we are dealing with here is that if we look at the academia, we see two different, actually, disciplines that developed, and these two disciplines have nothing to do with each other. On the one hand, you have, and each one has its own tools, rationale, convictions. And so on the one hand, you have biblical history of Israel and biblical archaeology. And on the other hand, you have Middle Eastern studies. These are two disciplines. They have nothing to do with each other. The first is housed in the theology department. The other in the Middle East and Near East studies department. The first deal with ancient history of Palestine. The other with modern history. Between them, there is no connection, but an unbridgeable gap. While my colleagues, we heard them, are busy decolonizing history and archaeology, I am busy trying to decolonize theology. That's what we are doing. So, while historians are trying to rewrite the history of Palestine from an indigenous perspective, and archaeologists busy to reinterpret archaeological findings, and while Western theology had been supporting Israel's claim theologically, we as Palestinian Christian theologians have been struggling to make sense of it all. So, this is what we are, what I'm doing actually as a contextual theology. Now, let me now tell you the theory that I have been developing, and that will be in this last chapter of the book. First of all, the Bible did not originate in the Bible Belt, right?
Bible Belt.
It came out of Palestine. The biblical stories are connected to Palestine geography, to its people, and to its culture. This is fact. Now, I believe that Israel did not confiscate only our land, but it's confiscated our stories. The stories of our forefathers and foremothers, which is for me the Bible. And then this Bible was weaponized against us Palestinians. So is there a way to redeem the Bible from its Zionist hijacking? This is the question that we are struggling with. Now, the theological hermeneutic that I'm trying to develop use actually what Professor Eugene just mentioned before, the lens of long durée, which means I have to look at the history of Palestine through long period of time. I cannot just look at the 20th century separate from the first century or whatever. I have to look at them as one continuous history. And this is actually where the Bible come in. And the second, I use a geopolitical lens for reading the Bible. Nobody else tried that before. So this is really the newest thing. So what do I mean by that? If we look through a long durée approach, we realize that unfortunately Palestine, it's a small country surrounded by five regional powers. You have Egypt, you have Europe, you have Turkey, the Hittites, others, you have Mesopotamia, Syria, Iraq, and you have Iran. These five regional powers, they influenced our history at different stages, often actually occupied Palestine. So over the period of time, Palestine has been occupied by one of these regional powers. And the Bible, I believe, has to do with this reality. If we look historically at the Bible as a book, the oldest sections of the Bible goes back to the 10th century BC. That's almost the same century when the first real empire, the Assyrian Empire, emerged. Now, for me, this tells me that the question about God is very much connected to the question about the empire. Why? Because the empire behaves like God. They have all the power, they can do whatever they want, and nobody can stop them. Now, if you live in Palestine and you feel the heat of the empire, you keep asking yourself, God, where are you? I mean, why don't you come? We believe in you, but why can't you come and deliver us from the empire? And I believe that actually the entire Bible has to do with this question.
Does God answer you?
That's the question. I will come to that now. So empire, they trigger the question about God. And so But it's not only that they ask the question. Our people under imperial rule do not remain passive. We were talking about agency, I think, a lot today. They long for liberation and revolt and resist. Wherever there is occupation, there is resistance. Imperial oppression inevitably begets a yearning for freedom. So through this geopolitical lens, we come to see the Bible as a form of resistance literature. That's the idea. Okay? Resistance literature refers to written works that challenge system of oppression, whether colonial, imperial, or militaristic. Emerging from context of domination, it gives voice to marginalized communities, affirming their identity, culture, and humanity in the face of empire. Actually, the term resistance literature was first coined by the Palestinian writer Hassan Kanafani in his work 1966, Resistance Literature in Occupied Palestine. So basically what I'm saying, we need to read the Bible as a book of resistance literature because it corresponds to the reality of the people of Palestine who have endured one occupation after the other, from the Assyrian to the Babylonian, to the Persian, to the Greek, to the Romans, all the way to the Israeli. So through a long durée process, we see them in one continuity. So it is no coincidence that the biblical texts were not composed in the center of power. They were not written in any of these empires, but in occupied Palestine. Palestine is thus the Ur context of the Bible. Our Palestinian ancestors, irrespective of what religious they belong to, our Palestinian ancestors resisted empire by telling stories of survival, struggle, and faithfulness, and by faithfully passing them from one generation to the next. And each generation reinterpreted these stories in light of its own historical moment, ensuring their continued relevance. The Palestinian poets actually continue this today. If you look at how, for example, Mahmoud Darwish has employing biblical stories in the Palestinian struggle, you can see that the Bible is not closed. It continues actually through different means today. So from that, yeah, 2 minutes, yeah, I'm almost done. So from the book of Genesis, the first book in the Bible, to the Revelation, actually, all of them, they are narratives that confront empire. This is what these texts do not emerge from positions of power, but from communities under siege, communities longing for freedom. At its heart, the Bible is about liberation. It is the central thread that runs throughout it. The people of God living under the shadow of empire have always longed for and fought for liberation. This is the story of the historical Jesus who came to proclaim the reign of God, that was his mission, an alternative reign, alternative vision, based on justice rather than the Pax Romana, which was based on dominion. Yet, and this is the last question I would like to leave with you, what happened when the text of oppressed, which is the Bible, become tools in the hand of the oppressor? This is why any faithful Christian hermeneutic must be grounded in a rigorous socio-political analysis and clear understanding of power dynamics. When the stories of the oppressed are co-opted by empire, when these stories are read as factual history, the Bible can be weaponized, transforming liberation narratives into genocidal theologies. Mm. And this is exactly what we are experiencing today. The book of Joshua, unfortunately, has been used by European colonizers in North America, in South America, in South Africa, in Australia, against the indigenous people, and Israel is using these texts against us as genocidal texts. You heard Netanyahu as one example on October 27th when he announced that the Israeli army are getting into Gaza. He said, quoted the Bible saying, do not forget what Amalek did for you.
Remember the Amalek.
Exactly, and basically asking and calling for a genocide. So this is what is unfolding today in Gaza. The God invoked today by Netanyahu is no longer the God of the oppressed, but the God of the empire, a God who crushes rather than delivers. This is the God of the occupier, not the God of the Bible. The God of empire is militaristic. The God of the people, however, is found in survival, suffering, and steadfast hope. And I conclude, so the faith in God has sustained the people of Palestine through every wave of occupation, displacement. Empire cannot rejoice in their conquest, for while they may destroy lives and homes, and we heard about it from Dr. Muhammad today, they cannot crush the spirit of the people. This is the resilience that the Apostle Paul experienced when he wrote to the church in Corinth. We are hard, and this is our reality as Palestinians, we are hard pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. It is precisely these biblical and Quranic stories that have enabled generation after generation of Palestinians to endure. They provide not only the strength to resist, but the spiritual stamina to remain resilient, even in the darkest time.
Bravo, bravo.